beautiful. Jed, I could hear you speaking to our group. Thank you so much. This is the Media Biz Power Hour. We are delighted that all of you are here. This is a conference call that we have been hosting every single month for the last 15 years. This call is filled with publication leaders, publication executives, advertising sales professionals of all kinds. This is where we live. We have an incredible program today, and all of us have spent a decade and two or more directly doing what you're doing. So this is not just out of a textbook. This is not just what we're guessing or what we'd be thinking or funking. This is what we know to be true, okay? As you're getting settled in, please, if you would, try not to multitask, shut off phones, close office doors, have a really clear window, get out a blank pad. You're going to capture at least 2 pages or more of notes, and that's exactly what we want you to accomplish. It's not an accident that we don't have you on a screen. We don't want you multitasking because we know, based on all of our work over the last 15 years, that the very best of educational adult learning and education comes from your ability to take good old-fashioned notes as we roll along and field any questions to us. As you're getting settled in, please know that we'll be fielding questions. You can send an email to Ernest@powerhour.com during the course of the program, or just simply hit a reply to the reminder and the confirmation that got you here and send those over to us and then come right back to the program, okay? I'd like to have Jed, the president and founder of MediaBid, say some opening words. I'll say some opening words. I'm going to introduce Ryan, who's going to be making the presentation today on strategies for growing your online revenue, and you're going to love the 3 points that we're going to be covering. So, Jed, how about some opening words here, please?
Okay, great. Well, once again, I want to, as usual, thank Ernest. He really brings an incredible amount of knowledge to these calls, and they would not be nearly as interesting or as informative without him, and Ryan as well. On previous calls, has always done a great job of really educating us on more digital oriented topics than Ernest and I take on our own. But MediaBids is happy to be involved with these. We are a print advertising marketplace. We buy and sell thousands of ads a month. We have about 10,000 publications, about 17,000 advertisers that use MediaBids to buy and sell print advertising. So we're always happy to explain how it works to anyone who's interested, and we'd love for anyone who's using us to follow up to learn how to use us more, or anyone who's not to find out more about us by either giving us a call or responding to the email addresses, which you'll receive after the call. Again, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. And for those of you who work directly with Jed and MediaBids, you know how wonderful their service is for driving and adding revenue to your publications and your website work. And then conversely, for those of you that have not had an opportunity, please do so. There's a reason why Jed and I have been working together for years and years and years, and that's because we help our publications and our clients succeed. And that's the very spirit of what Jed does, and that's what we do on the Power Hour side of the house. I've been around publications and publishing since the mid-'80s. I've owned publications, run publications, had more than 60 sales executives working for me in my corporate days. Today, we are a coaching and training organization. We have a huge recruiting division. We help our clients make pre-hiring decisions with our assessment tools. We help our clients buy and sell, and we help our clients drive their revenue, which directly relates to Ryan. Ryan is our VP of Web Strategies that helps our clients win and add more revenue to their publication. He has both worked with and optimized more than 4,000 websites in all of his corporate days and experiences, and does a wonderful job for and with all of our clients. So it's a pleasure to have Ryan here. We're going to be talking about strategies for growing your online revenue. Ryan, it's always a pleasure. I think this is your third time maybe joining us this year. I think we did 2 or 3 last year, and we always have a huge turnout and a wonderful call. So how are you
Excellent.
Doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much. I always appreciate the invite. Always love to talk about online revenue strategies. It's so near and dear to my heart, and I know that now more than ever before, it's very near and dear to the heart of the people on the call today. So just thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. And I know we're going to work through 3 specific points, so let's talk about the first one first, and then we'll work our way through. We have questions teed up as well that relate to this, and then we'll weave in any questions that come in real time as well. So the first point we agreed to cover was press releases into cash, how are publications leveraging the need for advertisers who need immediate press and turning it into fast and dynamic revenue. Let's talk about that one.
Well, it's really an interesting concept, Ernest and Jed and everybody, because when you're working within a publication, you constantly are under this barrage of press releases coming in from various product providers, service providers, advertisers, etc. And what are they always looking for? They're always looking for free press. They're looking to get placed in your magazine or placed in your newspaper, placed in your publication, and they're looking to do it free. And so most of us sitting, you know, behind the desk, whether as a sales manager or as an editor, we just really don't have the capacity to make that happen. Because, you know, the old adage, Ernest, you know, if you do it for one, then you have to do it for all.
Absolutely.
So what happens more times than not is those press releases either just get thrown sort of into an empty hole on the website. Maybe they get a little bit of press, but more than likely where they end up is in that what we refer to as that circular file, and they end up in the trash. This is what I have seen happen and seen work really effectively for many different publications. They actually take those press releases and they give them to the sales team, okay? Now, this doesn't have to be a junior sales rep, and after I explain this, probably senior sales reps are going to really want to take advantage of this too. Think about the psychology behind what's happening when someone sends you a press release. They're looking for free press. They're looking to make a decision. So a salesperson grabs that press release. They call the number on the release. And when that publication pops up on the phone, it's highly likely, isn't it, that someone is going to take that call because they know they sent the press release and they're looking for press. So how do we spin that and turn it into a sale? All of us, I hope all of us, have really robust, great e-newsletters. You're able to contact that person and say, hey, you know, just as a matter of policy, you know, we don't run press releases in our magazine or our publication, or perhaps you've missed the deadline. We have an e-newsletter for that. This is what we'd love to do. For X price, we can include you in our e-newsletter that goes out to 35,000 readers or whatever it is. We'll include a nice link over to our website where your press release can live in our archives, or depending on how you have it set up, can link it directly over to the product or service provider's website. Now, a lot of times people will say, well, Ryan, that would work in theory, but sometimes it's a press person that's sending the press release. And the way I look at it is like this. Wonderful. That's great, because that's the person that's going to know who it is that you need to talk to. And again, you bypass that issue of people won't take my call, they won't return my voicemail, et cetera, et cetera. So what you've done is you're taking an opportunity for a captive prospect and potentially turning it into a sale. Now, one final, you know, brief, you know, point on this is you really have to keep it simple. You have to keep the price point as reasonable as you can while still staying within your rate card. But you want to make the opportunity attractive, because this could be the beginning of an extremely long-term advertising relationship. So we call it press releases to cash. I think it is kind of catchy, but that, in a nutshell, is the overall premise behind it.
Absolutely. And so let's field a couple of questions here that directly relate to this. Sherry asks the question, are press releases necessary for every issue?
I don't know if I understand the question.
Are press releases, in other words, would we include them in every issue of a publication? Would we just spin them off to the e-newsletter? Or do we just use them as a sales tool to be able to go back out to?
Sure, now I understand. I think that it really depends upon the philosophy of the business. You know, in a lot of circumstances, it's interesting for me to know that a lot of times people often pick up a magazine or a publication to read the classifieds, to read the business listings, to read the obituaries, things like that. So I do think that there is potentially some extremely valuable content. And so I'm not in this circumstance advocating sort of a pay-for-play kind of relationship where you pay to be in our magazine. What I am saying is I'd like to take this opportunity to be able to contact the advertiser and say, hey, we probably don't run it in our magazine. We might have room on our website. Hey, I think this is a good opportunity for you to be involved in our e-newsletter that reaches so many people. I think that's probably the most effective way. But to answer Sherry's question, I don't think you have to have press releases in your magazine each issue to be a success.
All right, very good. And let me tuck in another question here. This comes in from Tyler, who says, what additional content beside press releases can we populate our daily newsletter with? And I know that, Jed, we've done entire calls all focused on an e-newsletter. And let's just clarify, for those of you that would like to go back and cycle back to historical programs, we've done it. And frankly, Jed, as you know, and Ryan, as we know, there is no publication in the world who can thrive or survive without the combination of what? Great publication, great website, and a great e-newsletter. It's the
exactly.
glue that strings it all together. It's like a three-legged bar stool. It's only three-legged and strong because it has three legs.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you that have heard us on prior calls, break out all the components of e-newsletters. You've literally heard Jed and myself say, stop in your tracks. If you don't have one before the sun goes down in the next 12, 24, 48 hours, you are not doing what needs to be done. And frankly, you're not competing in the marketplace. So without going down that path, those are hours and hours of work behind the scenes that you need, that we want you to go listen to and access and deploy. But let's just agree that assuming you have it, coming back to Tyler's point, he's asking what else can we put beside press releases or exposure for our clients in our daily newsletter, Ryan?
Sure. I would say, always, depending upon your industry or your sector, you want to try to include, if you can, any type of breaking news that always draws a crowd. Industry information. I also think that there is some generic, depending on your sector, there's generic marketing tips that you can find on websites like eMarketer.com. I like to include statistics in the newsletters that we send out. The biggest thing overall in e-newsletters is I want them to be thorough, but I don't want them to be overly complete, meaning that we don't want it to be a long, drawn-out book. After all, our goal is to include advertising, get results for our advertisers, get people over to visit our website. So I like to keep those e-newsletters short, simple, straightforward, and to the point. But there's so, depending on your audience, there's so many different things that you can include.
And here's the key piece. This is Ernest. Remember, a publication, you're like Switzerland. You can go out into the market. You can gather data. You can observe trends. You can generate surveys. You can create statistical information. You have a wealth of opportunity to go out, gather, pull in, and then to be able to deploy and share that information. You have an unbelievable ability to be a thought leader in your sector or your segment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what goes in that e-newsletter, you have to think about, how does this position our company, and what other data? What do we know about the demographics, the psychographics of our readers or those who buy the products and services of our marketplace? What do we know? Here's another one. We were working, Ryan, with our client up in Canada. We're going out to survey the actual advertisers. What are the buying trends? How many visits are people coming back to dealerships to purchase? Which items, the mid-price, higher price, lower prices, are going the most? There's a wealth of that data that we're gathering, that we're bringing in, that we can feed right back out. Now, there's two kinds of newsletters, as we know, right? The ones that go out to our advertisers and prospective advertisers, and then the ones that go out to our readers.
Right.
And we can feed off of both sides, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And also to the point, of press releases to cash, what I didn't want to forget is if you have a junior salesperson that's just starting with the organization, going through training, et cetera, this is a great way for them to be able to get really involved in your organization. Also, I just wanted to point out that this is so much better than a cold call. I mean, it really gives you an opportunity to call into a company and say, hey, we've got this great opportunity for you. Hey, we got your press release. So there's so many ways to potentially, be able to spin this press release into cash and be able to make some money from it.
And, Jed, as you're listening to us sort of roll along here with press releases and from a marketing and selling perspective, any questions that sort of come to mind or clarifications that might be helpful from your perspective?
No, I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think that, the publication can really take a press release and tailor, an advertising package, specifically to that advertiser's needs. And sort of present them on the first call with something which usually would take, several touch points to get to. So I think it makes a lot of sense. On the newsletters, as far as the content goes, I think that the nice thing about newsletters is that, you can have conceivably several of them, right? And they can be sort of all sort of based around content that's specific to that topic, and then presumably also it becomes more appealing to a specific group of advertisers who's trying to appeal to people who are interested in that content.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
And you also need to keep in mind, everybody that's on the call today, that if it is a PR company or a PR firm that's sending the press release, you will soon become their very good friend if they realize that, wow, if I have a press release that I want to get into a newsletter and there's a price point for that, all of a sudden they realize they'll incorporate that into their package. Ernest, we work with several people that now know that there's certain press firms, advertising agencies that contact them because they specifically want to be in their e-newsletter. Depending on how you structure it, we would probably encourage you and advise you to make sure that they also buy, you know, into print as well, and make it a part of a greater package. But what the last point I wanted to make on that is that even if it's a press firm that's contacting you on behalf of an advertiser or manufacturer, there's two ways to work it. Either work with them to help their customer, or say, we've got an opportunity for that. Who do I talk to at the company? And gives you a really good end road to be able to to get in touch with that company.
You know, it's an interesting point, Ryan, because you brought me back to a client, a dear friend and client in the Bay Area who had an automotive publication going back 15 years ago, and they had a whole section. It was called their calendar section, where they populated all that, and they got all the press releases and the calendar and events. And then all the person did on the other side, they just had a junior person who just went right back and sold ads on the back end of that. It was just tremendous. And then the other piece, even as recent as this last month, we have another client that's in Louisiana that has a whole section on their website all about free press releases, and they're converting those into $10,000 and $15,000 and $20,000 advertising buys. Works fabulous. And another group that had just launched their first newsletter in the history of their company went out yesterday and have two leads back that went out just to 400 readers in the last 24 hours. So everything we're talking about is kind of flowing in. I'm going, oh, wait a minute, all these little examples. So what we want all of you to know is that we're not talking about if I would or if I could. These are absolutely critical strategies that will help you succeed.
Right.
Let me just pause here. We've been feeding in some of the questions. If you have a question related to the points that we're covering, just hit a quick reply to the email we sent you out, the reminder, the confirmation. Post that to us, then come right back. Obviously, we don't want to lose you for more than a couple keystrokes. Or just send it over to ernest@powerhour.com, and we'll tie that right into the program, okay? So, Ryan, is there anything else we want to cover on point number one before we segue into the power of three newsletters and how to segment and so forth? Anything before we get to that?
You know, the big thing for me is that you just really need to keep it simple. You want the – I always, you know, try to tell people, and I know you do also, Ernest, is you want to create the path of least resistance for an advertiser to make a buy with you. You want them to have as few obstacles as possible. You want to make it simple and straightforward. And e-newsletters, which, you know, is a segue into what we're talking about next, are a really great and easy opportunity, in my opinion, to get people involved in the advertising of your publication.
Perfect. So again, the opportunity here is to tie in press releases, convert that into cash opportunities, create that into prospect streams, and off we go from there. Good things happen as a result. If they found your publication or found your website as a result of that component, then just by that, they're saying that you do provide a valuable audience. They're actually seeking you out. That may also have you pause thinking about your website and saying, where do we talk about press releases? Where do we describe how we're handling that? And that's all about sort of web strategies and some of the web optimization things on the other side of the house. What is your site being found for? Then how does a person come in and engage on the press release side? A very specific strategy to come back into the revenue side. Okay, so Ryan, absolutely love it and love the insight from that perspective. So let's shift into point number two. Let's talk about the power of three newsletters and three and the reason why three, and then how can we segment your newsletters and triple the revenue. So let's talk about that, please.
Sure, you bet. I mean, I hope, as you stated, and Jed, you know, backed you up on this, if you don't have an e-newsletter based around the editorial of your publication, you need to do that right away. Here's the thing that we've learned. We've learned, one, eMarketer.com did a study that showed that you can send the same person three pieces of email in a 30-day period as long as the email is very specific to their hobby, their niche, the interest that they signed up for. So let me pause for a second. You know, my nature is to go real fast. Let me slow down for a second so everybody can follow me on this. What eMarketer is saying is that if someone came to your website, and let's just, for an example, say that it's a web, your publication is all about baseball, okay? And they've come and they've signed up to receive your e-newsletter and specials in regards to baseball. What eMarketer.com is telling us is that you can actually send 3 pieces of email to that person as long as it relates to the interest that they signed up for, in this case, baseball, in a 30-day period, and that person will not unsubscribe from your list. So meaning that you can get away with sending 3, but if you sent 4, the propensity for them to unsubscribe is, you know, much, much higher. So what that tells us then is that we have the ability as a publisher to take our list, and you want to make sure that you follow all ethical guidelines in regards to this, okay? And we're not going to get too granular on the ethical guidelines, but I think you know what I mean. You want to be real careful with those emails because they are, in my opinion, they are like gold. They're valuable to you from a sales capacity. If you go to sell your publication, they're extremely valuable. So you want to treat them with the utmost respect. So a name that's on your main master editorial list, as long as in the beginning you said, listen, a little paragraph when they signed up that we may send you special offers that are specific to this niche and things like that, I want to suggest to you that you could actually create a total of 3. So you'd have your editorial list. Maybe you'd have an e-newsletter that would go out to that same list called New Products and Services that relate exactly to that niche. Maybe you might have one that's all about technology. Maybe you're a B2B magazine and you have one called the Monthly Legal Minute. Maybe you're a B2B magazine and you have one that's all about new technology for business owners. What eMarketer.com is telling us is that we can take our list and we can email to these people more than one time a month, and they still will be happy, and it gives us the ability to have more to sell. So depending on your publication niche, depending upon your title, depending on, you know, what it is that you're trying to achieve, the beautiful thing about this is you can go forward with creating other e-newsletters as long as they follow within the same interest of the overall publication and basically cause no harm. So when you're thinking about this, what you might want to do, and we've seen this happen a lot, is rather than start from the top and go down to the advertiser, a lot of times what we like to do is actually go to the advertising pool, go to your key advertisers, and say, you know, we were thinking of starting an e-newsletter all about technology and how technology applies to, all of our readers. What do you think of that? Or you might say to the advertiser, you know, if we had an e-newsletter in addition to our normal editorial e-newsletter, and it could be about anything that could potentially help your business, what would that look like? What could that be? There's something to remember, and I know, Ernest, you'll grin when I say this because it's got a lot of P's in it, a lot of alliteration. People are passionate about projects when they're asked to participate, okay?
I mean, I'm laughing right in the middle of that. I just ruined your magic. Say that again. I'm sorry. Keep the P's. Go ahead.
People are passionate about projects when they're asked to participate. And so what happens, and this also, if you are in a management role, you're a sales manager, publisher, et cetera, if you ever wonder why it is that salespeople don't get excited about packages and stuff that you are telling them to sell, it's because you've not involved them in the process. We have found, our publishers that we work with have found that if you go to the advertiser and say, what can we do in terms of an e-newsletter or a package or whatever that could really help you, what would that look like? And you get their buy-in from day one. Now, do you want your advertisers to control your life? I guess we would all say no, but I think on the flip side, all of us, you know, subtly understand that advertisers actually do have quite a bit of control because they're our source of revenue. Overall, the point is this. Everything in the world happens in terms of 3. 3 legs on a stool. We live in a 3D world. Why should e-newsletters be any different? So the encouragement is, you've got a great editorial list. You want to be very ethical and very respectful of the names on your list. But if you can create other advertising opportunities to include advertisers in other e-newsletters, our research tells us you can do as many as 3 a month, and your readers will still be exceedingly happy.
Okay. So let's weave in some questions if we could. I have about 4 or 5, and again, they're rolling in real time. For those of you that have questions, just hit a reply to the confirmation, and we'll be more than happy to tuck them right in here real time. And one actually came from Semana, who's in Texas, who said, what might the rate be for a press release or exposure in a newsletter? So it's maybe just that combination of in a newsletter, what might we charge? And maybe we can just give either a range or a broad stroke, because I know there's a lot of details related to that. But let's at least give a broad stroke to the group today, okay?
Sure. In general, your cost per 1,000, so the cost to send out 1,000 emails, is directly related to how, in my opinion, how influential your niche is. Let me just give you some very, very broad examples. If you're sending out an e-newsletter to lawyers, okay, that is, for example, going to be, you know, as much as $225 a 1,000 if you're going through a website like lawyers.com. Another niche, though, that's really high, but it's very popular, like food and wine, for example. It's a niche, and it's a very targeted niche, okay? And so that could be as high as $95 to $100 a 1,000. If you're fairly broad, say, for example, you're sending out an e-newsletter that's about just business, you know, just business in general, then that might be, on a national average, around $45, you know, a 1,000. It really just depends upon the niche, the market that you're serving, the engagements, you know, of your audience that you're sending it out to. So in a broad stroke, typically, you're going to start on the low end around $40 a 1,000. And I've not heard many that are higher than a couple hundred dollars a 1,000, but I'm sure they're out there. It seems that the more influential the group, the more niche the group, the higher the CPMs tend to be. So I know to answer that question, it's very, very broad, but at least it'll give you some general, you know, sort of general guidelines from a national perspective.
And just to dovetail behind this, please promise us that you are weaving together a newsletter plus print
right
on your website. You start to break this out, and all of a sudden the person goes, that's interesting, I'm buying your e-newsletter at $20 a 1,000, I'm buying your website at $4 a 1,000, and I'm with your print publication at $76. Huh?
Yeah.
What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Please
mm-hmm.
do not unbundle them. You have to give it the strength. Let people get your publication, your newspaper, your magazine, your public, whatever that is, let them tie into the newsletter, and then let them also get the website exposure. You want all three working from them. And one of the biggest challenges we have is when we're working with publications that have unraveled it, it gets very dicey, very soupy, and they come to us because they are not happy. It's not working as they planned. There is a question that just came in from Karen, who says, if we only have a small selection of emails, how do we collect more, rent, buy, et cetera? Karen, we are not big fans of the buy strategy or the rent strategy.
Right.
That's a spamming approach. You have a publication that you want to include compelling ads and reasons why you want them to come to your website. You have a website. When people come to your website, to give them a compelling reason why they want to ask for and subscribe to your newsletter. Let your print and your website come back to the newsletter. Then let the newsletter also call out for the, if you'd like to forward this, how to subscribe, how to pass it along to other colleagues. Go into your Facebook if you use that. Go into your LinkedIn and tie that piece in. Let everything come back to your e-newsletter, and that's how you gain permission by permission respectfully. Ryan, do you want to add a little more to Karen? And
sure. I think all of those, Ernest, that whole thought there, that thought cycle of yours is excellent. Another piece to dovetail behind what Ernest said is most publishers do not have a promotional calendar in place, something that is promotional oriented that causes people to come to the website that are part of your interest, your hobby, your niche, that would encourage people to sign up for your e-newsletter. So you may want to consider, you know, some type of, you know, promotional strategy to get people to the website. We've also seen publishers that use contesting and promotion. It's not for everybody. Use contesting and promotion to draw people in to get them to sign up. You want to be real careful about that because you want people to sign up for the e-newsletter for the right reason, to actually receive the newsletter and not necessarily to win a prize. So there are some promotion and marketing type things. But overall, to accentuate what Ernest said, you want to make sure that they understand this newsletter is going to be valuable. It's going to contain exclusive information, you know, really, really diehard information about the hobby, the niche, the interest that you serve at your publication. It might be breaking news. It might be daily updates. And again, if you want to peel that list off to have multiple newsletters, you want to make sure there's a nice, simple, straightforward blurb where you sign up for those e-newsletters, where they sign up, that says something along the lines of, you know, we're going to send you our e-newsletter, how frequently that's going to happen. It may say something along the lines of, we may also send you special offers directly related to the interest of, you know, whatever your magazine is. And I would also give them a promise of not spamming. I'd say, we don't like spam either. We promise not to spam you. We're only going to send you information we feel is relevant. and you want to make sure you're really clear. And that's all about respecting your e-newsletter list. Have to respect it.
Yep, and really it works both ways. Number one, what's in it for me, meaning the reader. So as we think about what the e-newsletter going out is it valuable? Do you find it interesting? Is it interesting to you about your sector, about your industry, about your niche, about the world that you're in, and about your audience? Think about that piece. And then related to the frequency, think about it the other way. This is the good old golden rule. What do I get, you know, from other readers? What do I get from my competitors? What do I get from my industry association? Yeah. What do I pull from my LinkedIn? What do I see on Facebook, depending on where we are, B2B or B2C? You know, sort of look at those frequencies. Look, I get something daily. It's called the Daily Word of the Day. Isn't that great? I get to read a word of the day, and I expand my vocabulary. I ask for that every day, but there aren't many things that sort of play through on a daily basis. So typically once a week, typically every other. When we get started, Ryan, as you know, and Jed, when we're rocking with our publication clients, we say, look, let's sort of, you know, walk, run, sprint. Can we do something once a month? Just simple. Keep it bone simple. But once a month is minimum. We must deliver. You know, the sun will not go down in the month of November until you get something out. It has to happen, right? And once a month. And once you get rolling with that, then we say, God, can we do it twice a month? All right, and once we get rolling with that, then we start into the three. So we want all of you to know, please do not go out into the world thinking that you must have three or you'll fail. It's start with one, and you'll succeed, and then second and third will amplify and magnify and so forth, okay? We do have a couple of other questions. There's a question here from Tom in California who says, how can we increase our open rate or click-through rate?
Ooh, good question.
Want to field that one?
Yep. Yeah, thanks. I jumped on that one, didn't I? There's something to remember, and I hope if anybody is checking their email right now, I hope you'll pause for a second because it relates to you. Many of us use Microsoft Outlook or other email clients that have a list of emails that have come in on the top and then a preview pane down below. Follow me on this, okay? You can actually read an email in the preview pane without opening the email. Now, granted, if you want to see the pictures, you have to click the download pictures link. But you can actually read an email, Ernest and Jed, without opening it. So you have to be very careful because you cannot judge the success of an email campaign by the open rate anymore because most software does not track when someone reads it in their preview pane. So you want, if you're talking with an advertiser, and this is getting slightly off course, so I'll come back real quickly. You want to make sure that you're setting your expectations up in advance with that advertiser because if they're expecting gargantuan open rates, it may not happen because so many people read their email in preview mode. It is becoming actually a very, very big trend. Major, major agencies are making a shift from open rates to encouraging click-throughs because it's a little bit easier for them to gauge. So be real careful that you're not underselling or over-promising based upon an open rate of an email because of the number of people that are opening it in preview. A lot of times people will read their email on their mobile device, and many, many email service providers don't accurately track email opened on mobile devices. And then, as I said, about the preview pane. So be real careful about that open rate. I hope I've explained that well enough.
No, I love that. And I'm just going to go down another path for just a second. Let's remember that the business we're in the advertising business. We're sort of drinking all our own Kool-Aid. 15 years ago, I began my company, and I wanted to put something in writing, and I licked 10 stamps, and I mailed an article to 10 people. I think my mother, Jed and Ryan, I mailed one to my mother. She always gave me the red pen and came back and edited it, but I love my mother. She's great. And then 10 became 20, and 20 became 30. Then it moved to fax, then it moved to email. Today we have 6 newsletters that go out to almost 200,000 people. We go out across LinkedIn, 60 groups, another 200,000. Last month alone, 1.7 million eyes saw what we had to say. I just want to say to all of you, I don't know, you know, the classic words, which half of my advertising is working? Back to open rate, click rate.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is I don't care. I don't have to stop and think about that. 1.7 is a good number in my
mind.
Right.
Yeah. Now the question, to be real specific. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so the point is, that we have to, you know, recognize that our e-newsletters, that our publications, that our websites, they are being seen. Now the question is, how do we maximize it? How do we explain that to our advertisers, and how do we maximize it to recognize that you have an incredible story with your publication, you have an incredible e-newsletter, and an incredible website? If you're not able to convey that, or your advertisers aren't seeing or realizing the value, that's a different challenge.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay?
Agreed. Now, if you want to increase the to answer the question very specifically, if you're looking to increase the open rate, a lot of times you have to go back and look at the subject line. The subject line is typically a throwaway for most people, and it should not be. It should be as important, if not more important, than actually what's in the newsletter altogether. You have to be very careful because we've done, oh, gosh, Ernest, we've done so many studies related to the open rates of emails based upon the subject line. If you can personalize the subject line, it's always better. You want to make sure that it's got some clear call to action. And, I mean, there's so many strategies to increasing the open rates, but really be careful about subject lines as well.
Yep, and subject lines, and Jed, I hear you're going to chime in here, is more than subject lines. I start also like the from line. Who is it coming from?
Yeah, agreed.
Is it coming from your publication? What a concept. Or is it coming from Mary Jones, who's on your production team? It's like, whoa, wait a minute. It sounds so basic. What's the from line? What's the from address? How does that tie into your branding? What's in it? This is just like in the newspaper where we call above the fold. Yeah. What is the above the fold that's in the subject line? And what do you see on the first 10% of that screen? That's really the key piece. I'll share with all of you that I have certain e-newsletters that I call dessert reading or set aside. They come in and I go, man, whatever's coming from that publication or that author or that company is so good, I'm not flying through that at 10 o'clock on a Wednesday. I set that aside till the afternoon or maybe even the weekend, the highest value. So think as well about the value and how you position your newsletter as it relates to your publication. Jed, I heard you chiming in on that one as well.
No, I think I was just breathing. But
I do have a
couple questions for Ryan. Is there a finite number of ads that you would recommend on a newsletter before it starts potentially losing its value to the reader?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, you have to be really careful to look at, you know, probably it, when people are scrolling down, once you get to, like, the second pane, you know, if you are getting to the second pane, at that point, you know, you're beginning to diminish the value of the ad quality will be diminished as it goes down. So I would, you know, want to be real careful and maybe try to stay with maybe around 4 if you're looking at ads that are maybe 300 by 250. I think 4 is quite a few. I also, though, like the approach of using text advertising within an e-newsletter because so many people don't download the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So many people get so wrapped up in sending this fancy-schmancy HTML emails out. And we've seen a lot of success with text-based emails, e-newsletters, and text-based advertising.
Gets picked up less by spam filters, too, right?
Well, and that's the truth. And so you really need to be careful, you know, your spam ranking on a particular email is pretty low. And you can do that by avoiding words like free, a special offer, you know, things that are just real commonplace. And, of course, you know, all of the, you know, normal words that you wouldn't want to ever see in a business, you know, e-newsletter as well.
And I should probably add for all of you that are listening, make no mistake, there's lots of rules and guidelines related to this. And myself and Ryan and our team clearly understand this. We drink our own Kool-Aid. We have our own newsletters. We help our clients, you know, craft theirs. And frankly, in most cases with our clients, we literally will edit and review the first 1, 3, 5, 7, 10. We want really you to understand what the guidelines, the expectations are, where you can stretch the envelope, where you're crossing the line, what's in it for me as a reader, all of those pieces. We just want you to know that there is an art and a science to this. And as and when or if and when you ever needed help or want us to review, we just had a client yesterday, Ryan, we were working with in Texas that sent us over a newsletter. We had an opportunity to look at it. And frankly, our comments were, looks good, doesn't brand your company, though, and there's parts of it that's confusing.
Right.
They've been producing that newsletter for, what, 5, 6 years?
Exactly.
Okay? So, anyhow, bottom line, that's the piece on that. Hey, we love the questions that are rolling in. Let's keep them cooking. Let's move, if we could, to our third point here, and let's talk about ad agencies. So the third point we promised to cover, what ad agencies really want, What are the three main points all ad agency buyers truly want from your publication? Let's fire this one up, and we've got the questions already teed up because they've been rolling in here. Let's go.
Sure, I'm sure. Dealing with agencies is something that is, unnecessary. I wouldn't say necessarily evil because that'd be the wrong way to state it, but dealing with ad agencies can be a very pleasurable experience. I know that many of you just grimace, when you see an RFP come in from an ad agency. But really, after all the years of working with them, from Minneapolis to Los Angeles, New York, to Fort Lauderdale, we just have seen them all, Ernest, in our various capacities. There's really three main things from a digital capacity. Now, keep in mind, a lot of agencies have split themselves. If you're dealing with, J. Walter Thomas or Thompson or somebody, they'll have a print person, and they'll usually have an interactive person. So typically, so we're going to talk today about digital stuff. There's three things that most digital media buyers want. They want, first of all, accurate data. I'm going to come back and talk about that. They want accurate RFP responses. And the third thing is they really are looking for big buys with a ton of added value. And so let's talk about those three things. First, accurate data. It's very important that you have this data ready, that the data is fresh and it's not old. There's nothing worse, according to the media buyers that I've spoken with in as little as 24 hours ago, if data is old. You have the data in front of you. It should be fairly real-time, so anything older than 30 days is really not going to work for them. Here's the number one pet peeve in regards to point number one, fluff numbers, numbers that are fluff. Now, does that mean that they're a lie? No. But many times people will round up, and they'll round up not the way they were taught in the third grade. They will round up by like 25,000 or 50,000. If the number of page views to your website is 150,000, that's not 200,000. It's 150,000. It's a big difference. One thing you have to be careful of, there's websites like compete.com that give pretty darn accurate numbers. Now, I'm not saying they're exceedingly accurate. I'm just saying they're pretty darn accurate, okay? So if you give numbers that are fluffed up to a media buyer, it's highly likely that they're going to find you out. And this is one thing I can assure you. If you are found to be a person that fluffs up numbers, you probably aren't going to get digital buys because these people are going to judge you by these numbers. You want to be prepared for that. They're going to judge you by those numbers. So what do they really want to know from a data perspective? And you can write these down. They want to know unique users, but they also want to know versus total users. They want to know, okay, how many total users and how many unique users, okay? They want to know the number of page views or the number of pages that are being served by your website. All of these numbers can be found in your Google Analytics, okay? Then, except for this one, then they want to know your ad impressions, the number of ads that are being served in a given period of time, usually 30 days, on your website. What are those ad impressions, and what are the ad positions that you have available? Now, just a side note, on ad positions, they're also going to want to see if you are Interactive Advertising Bureau size. There's a website, IAB, so that's IndiaAlphaBravo.net, the Interactive Advertising Bureau, they have standard guidelines that 99% of publishers follow. Okay, if you don't have IAB standard sizes on your website, most of the time an agency won't buy you because they're not going to create special creative just for you. Also, it's really smart to be Interactive Advertising Bureau sized. The other thing that I like to do is I like to go to big websites, nice, robust, top 500 consumer mag websites. Take a look at the sizes that they're using, and make sure your web design doesn't lock you into a size because those sizes will change. Okay, so we've got unique users versus the total users, page views, ad impressions, ad positions. Okay, and then the last two we're going to talk about will confuse most people, and that's why to our second point, accurate RFP responses, agencies get real angry because you don't respond correctly. So there's two other pieces of data: share of voice, which is marked on an RFP as SOV, and then your cost per thousand, your CPM. Most people calculate it incorrectly. What is your share of voice? And I'd encourage you to follow along and take note of this, okay? Share of voice can be calculated two ways. And so you need to just clarify. I'm going to give you the most broad term. Share of voice is, in comparison to all other advertisers, what percentage of am I being seen? So if there's two advertisers on your website and they're one of them, that means their share of voice is 50%. Okay, now that's the most common way to calculate share of voice. The other way that they may want you, but they'll specify this to calculate share of voice, is in comparison to other advertisers that are in my sector or in comparison to competitors of mine, what's my share of voice? Okay, you calculate that a very similar way. So back to the most broad example, if you have two advertisers on your website, each of them is getting 50% share of voice. That's the voice of the website is 100%, two advertisers 50-50.
Regardless of which page they're on.
Yeah, well, you could drill down a little bit deeper. It's a good question. But overall, what they're asking for is in terms of the run of site in most cases. Now, on the page itself, you could break it down even further, Jed. Yeah, you could break it down even further. So if you don't know, then you just ask them, how do you want me to calculate share of voice? Or start with a broad definition, and they'll ask you to get more specific. But then the last piece of data on that first point is cost per thousand. And most people don't calculate cost per thousand correctly. So here's the equation, if you want to jot this down. The cost per thousand, so you just would write CPM equals whatever your monthly cost is of an ad to run on the website, times 1,000 divided by your total page views is going to give you, your rough CPM. So monthly cost times 1,000 divided by your total page views. Now, one thing to remember, everybody, is that there are various complexities, levels of complexities, just like the question that Jed, just posed. There are these general, complexities, but for the most part, agencies are looking for, fairly top-level information, okay? The second point, go ahead.
Ryan, when you're calculating that information, do you separate out website data, explicit website data from e-newsletter data, or do you include both?
I separate it out completely.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because we've got two different price differentials.
Right.
We've got two, I wouldn't say they're different audiences, but they're definitely unique audiences. And we want to make sure that we're as accurate as we possibly can. And it leads then to the second point, which is accurate RFP responses. The most common complaint that I receive from agencies is this RFP is either not complete or doesn't contain the correct information. If you don't have a resource, like Ernest, myself, Jed, to ask these questions to, a lot of times you can Google to find out what does SOV or share of voice mean. You can Google how to calculate CPM. You can Google what are unique users versus total users. But you really need to get your head around the terms on an RFP and need to answer them correctly. Typically, it's going to come in the form of an Excel spreadsheet. They're going to ask you to fill in all these various pieces of information. And they want you to be exceedingly accurate because they've got a total media buy that they're trying to put you in as a piece of that. Okay? So a lot of times people think, oh, they're singling me out. Probably not. They're trying to. They have $10,000 to spend. They want to know how can they get the most impressions for the best value for their for their customer. And if you think they're trying to save their client money, that's probably not the case because that leads to point number three, and that is big buys. They really, ad agencies don't make money by making small advertising decisions. So what they're really looking for is a nice, robust buy, and they're looking for a lot of added value. And you might say to yourself, well, I don't understand why they always want added value in an online buy. Well, you have to remember something. Their job is to keep that account. Their job as an agency buyer is to keep their client happy. And to get them great advertising exposure and get them great results, okay? But overall, they want to look really, really good to the client. And so they're coming back to that client saying, look, you told me that you wanted to spend $20,000. I not only spent your $20,000, but I got you all of this exposure and I got you an additional $10,000 in advertising. Aren't I the best ad agency in the world? The reason I like working with ad agencies is because I find them to be, fairly narrow in terms of what it is that they need. And when you realize what it takes to please them, returning RFPs is pretty simple and straightforward. And to that point of RFPs, if you're not on their RFP list, well, then that's a problem. You need to formulate a plan to contact agencies through various resources and say, I need to be on your RFP list. Could you please make sure that I'm on the RFP list for X company for next fall? It's highly unlikely going to say no. Usually they'll say, sure, yeah, that's not a problem. Let me give you my email address, or here's where you need to go to fill it out. So just a quick recap, and then we'll answer some questions. You've got three things most digital ad agencies want. Accurate data, no fluff. Two, very accurate RFP responses. Don't be afraid to ask questions if you need some clarity. Don't ask them how to calculate CPM. That will not make you look very good. And the third thing is they are looking to make good buys, big buys for their clients, and they want added value. Added value doesn't mean free. Okay? Added for you. Added value just means maybe it's a bonus that you can work into the overall media buy. Those are the three things. I think if you can narrow those three things down, you'll have some great success with digital agencies.
One thing to add to that, Ryan, is sometimes on these RFPs, and you probably know this better than anyone, is that there may be minimums, like, for example, you know, 50,000 page views a month minimum type of thing. And it is perfectly fine for you as a publication to sort of seek out a partner in your area and respond to the RFP on behalf of more than one property. The agency doesn't care. You know, they just want it. They want it to be as sort of straightforward as possible. But they're not going to go through the work to say, okay, well, if we matched up this, you know, this, to make up an example, Horse Magazine in Wyoming with this Horse Magazine in Montana, things would work out great and it'd be perfect for us. But they're not going to go through the work to do that, right? But if you do, and you get a partner, so to speak, on the RFP, it's oftentimes, you know, pays off.
I like that idea a lot.
Beautiful. And if we could, I've got a couple of questions I'd love to tuck in here, but I thought this one was very appropriate because we have one from Stephanie who says, "Can you please show me the money?" Stephanie, we love that. "Can you please show me the money?" And we're hoping, Stephanie sent this in prior to our call, so I saved it till the 52nd minute to say to Stephanie, "I hope we showed you the money." We're hoping, Stephanie, I so love that. I've got page after page after page of pre-questions. We had 5 pages coming in, and Stephanie, I love that. So we are hoping, and in fact, we done show you that. It's good. Let's see. We have a note from David. David in Canada. We love having our international callers. Who says, "As a newer publication with a circulation number in the mid to lower range, what strategies would you recommend in acquiring more national advertisers when we're working with agencies?" You want to address that one, Ryan?
Sure. I mean, the biggest thing is that you're just going to need to get on a lot of RFP lists. I mean, and so it really is a numbers game, and you're going to fill out a lot of RFPs. But the nice thing is, typically they're in Excel format, you know, David, so they're very, very easy, you know, to be able to fill out. So you will have to fill out a lot of RFPs before you get picked up. So it's as bad as this sounds, and I don't mean it to be, I'm not trying to be mean or disingenuous or anything. Agencies really run a lot of the numbers games. So many times publishers will spend time on saying, you know, "I'm regional," or "I'm national," or "I'm fuzzy," or "I'm not," or whatever it is. When push comes to shove, they want to know, what's the audience? You know, how specifically can I reach them, and how much is it going to cost? Now, granted, it's not that your magazine doesn't have to have quality, or quality doesn't matter, but when it comes, you really need to spend time looking and figuring out, okay, who are the agencies within my sector, whether you're using, you know, there's various resources, whether it's Hoover or Agency Compile or whatever. Find out who the agency is. Once you develop your prospect list, get in, you know, with the agency and say, "Can I please be placed on your RFP list?" And some of you may say, "Well, they won't even call me back." Well, the message is pretty simple, you know, on a voicemail. You know, "Hi, this is so-and-so from such-and-such magazine. I would like to be placed on the RFP list for such-and-such, you know, company." A lot of times they won't call you back, and a lot of times they don't call me back or our clients back, but we'll get the RFP. So don't feel like if they're not calling you back, you're not getting on the list. Or the voicemail could be, "Hey, I'm going to keep calling you until you verify that I'm on the RFP list," and then maybe they'll have an assistant, you know, call you back. So it's... You know, so that's an important way. Just get on the list.
One thing, you know, one question that came from Angela, which I thought was sort of applies to this, which I thought was an interesting question, was how do you deal with some of these big national advertisers who are essentially buying in such volume that they're really only looking for remnant space? Do you find that? Is that something that you can sort of pick out the advertiser before you respond to see if it's worth your time, or is that tough to do?
Yeah, I found that it's tough to do. But then again, you know, sometimes over the course year and a half, I mean, we were scraping for pennies in some cases. Some publishers were, you know,
right.
So they didn't really want to be that picky, you know, picky and choosy. But I think you've got to find advertisers that actually, you know, really fit your niche well, because in the end, you are going to be judged by the numbers. So if the click-through rate is low because the advertiser didn't actually apply to the, you know, to your website, then that, you know, potentially could be a bad, you know, could be a bad thing. So I think you want to create first your prospect list. Then from that, then you want to work through who the agency of record is. And there's various resources for that. You know, and then you want to reach out to that agency. And they're going to, they'll know pretty good, you know, pretty quickly if they feel like you're some, you know, you're some kind of, you know, of a good fit.
Well, and I'd like to just also say to David and to all of you, you know who you are. If you're catering to a Tiffany audience, then you're going after that kind of advertiser and that kind of agency. And if you're going after a Walmart audience, that's fine. Walmart does fabulous. They pick up, you know, a penny per billion. If you're somewhere in between, know who your audience is. Know who you're going after. I hear this piece over and over, and we hear it with our Power Hour team. I want nine nationals, and I want these big ones, and we all just salivate for that. And I've always paused and I say, can I just ask that, what market share and market penetration have we done of the small and the middle?
Right.
I'd rather have 600 as my solid base than four driving half my revenue. I'm not going to sleep well at night with four nationals. I'd rather 600 slicing up. I feel more diversified. In these economic times, no matter where you are around the world as you're rolling into our program here today, we know these are challenging times, and actually having a solider, deeper base is actually more profitable and more productive. So let me just pause right here. We're right at the top of the hour. We're going to finish up the formal portion of our call, then open it up. We'll tell you how. We'll explain how to do that in just a couple of moments, and we'll explain and we'll informally field some questions. Okay? So we know there's lots that have come in by email. I want to say to all of you, though, thank you so much for coming here. By definition, you are a leader. We appreciate your leadership, and we appreciate the advantage that you're getting as a result of the work that we're doing here today. This is an incredible investment in yourself. This also wraps up our program for this year. Jen and myself began all the way back in 2006. We've been tracking along for the last 5 years. This is our 46th call together. We've had more than 20,000 companies and attendees and participants, and it's really been a fantastic ride. So thank you to all of you. Also know we'll send you a follow-up note later on this afternoon. We're going to post this up on our LinkedIn group, and you can come in and continue the thread there, and we'll be more than happy to continue the conversation. And then also early next week, we'll also have it teed up, and you can go listen to it at the MediaBids website. Jed and his team and John, they're wonderful behind the scenes. They'll put it up there. They'll have it, and they'll make it available. And this will be the 46th call in a series of all the work we've done that goes all the way back to 2006. Jed, some closing words, please.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Ernest and Ryan. I learned a lot, and hopefully people on the call did as well. Hard to believe we spent 46 hours on these calls.
I'm feeling the love, my man.
2 days, wow.
It is cool, isn't it? Yeah. It's like a whole week together. All we do is drink coffee and fish in Alaska.
That's right. But, no, thanks again, and thanks to everyone who attended. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Ryan, please, some closing words for the group.
Well, I just want to encourage people to don't be discouraged by digital statistics and numbers. It is such a wonderful way to expand, you know, the offerings you have for your advertisers. It's a unique way to expand the total user experience. And just never forget, I mean, your advertisers need multiple touch points. They need these digital offerings that you have. So embrace them. Do your best to keep it as simple as possible. If you need help, reach out. There are people here like us that will help you. And embrace it, because it really, really can be a very, very fun ride.
Beautiful. To all of you, thank you so much again for joining the MediaBids Power Hour. I'm going to pause our call, so give me just 1 second.